He's the king of the sea, and he also talks with fish. And he's the only man in the Justice League that can pull off an orange shirt. Because your geek history lesson on Aquaman in the Justice League is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason, blah, 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 Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to Your Mind University because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or a mermaid from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour. Jason, I've been trying to think about which other members of the Justice League wear orange, and you pretty much stumped me.
Well, if you're just going the main seven, it's only Aquaman.
Yeah, but I was trying to go a little more like Grant Morrison I couldn't pull a ton.
Hawk Girl, technically, yes.
Yeah,
technically, yes.
All I could think of is Raptor from the Nightwing series.
You know, but...
Not a popular choice, that pumpkin color.
Not really. Especially made out of chainmail.
Yeah.
By the way, Ashley, I'm going to realize that we're talking about Aquaman to tie into Zack Snyder's Justice League is going to be hitting HBO Max the week of this recording, or maybe you've seen it 70 times by the time you're listening to this podcast. Whatever you want. You know, I'm going to talk about that. I want to tell everybody real quick about our new Justice League podcast because I'm going to ask Ashley. I bet some people requested Aquaman. And I forgot to write down their name. So I'm going to ask Professor Ashley to look that up while I tell everybody about the new podcast that we're also doing that is over on our Patreon called Jason and Jeremy John About Justice League. See, we're talking about Aquaman, his Justice League character. And he also appears in the Justice League animated cartoon. Now, this podcast is Jeremy Skinner and myself are going to review and we're going to chat about every episode of Justice League the Animated Series from 2001 because it's the 20th anniversary. And you can hear the first three episodes right now over at patreon.com/Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N, the place where you sign up to support this podcast. Now, you will be able to listen to part of the first episode in the main Geekers Lesson feed. But if you want to hear the other episodes fully uncensored, fully everything like that, go over to patreon.com/Jawin. And as thanks for supporting us, all the Justice Pod patrons that sign up for the new pod between now and March 31st, and all the old patrons that are on that level will get a personalized postcard of the Justice League podcast artwork where it features myself as Superman, never looked so good, and it features Jeremy Skinner as Mr. Flash running through the Speed Force. So go over and listen to that and support us at patreon.com/Jawin. Now, I'm looking at Ashley, and I don't know if I vamped enough for her to find this.
So, in my defense, I'm doing this on a tablet, so I cannot Command F. So, I am only doing this at first glance, and we have 400 topic requests. I'm at 250 right now. Let's say that we will do these right before we start the History 101.
Well, let's move on into the 10 cent origin. Well, the first section of our Aquaman podcast, everybody. And that is where basically I'm going to give you a Cliff Notes version of everything you know about Mr. Arthur Curry. And if you, I've actually thumbs up on me and I completely forgot what the rest of the 10 cent origin is.
It's if you go to like a dope Justice League themed cocktail party, if you're socially distanced watching this with your friends and someone goes, what's up with that Aquaman guy? Professor Jason has you covered.
Well, we're going to do that right now.
Yeah.
Of course, Aquaman was published by DC Comics. His first appearance was in More Fun Comics number 73 of November of 1941. He was created by Mort Weisinger as the writer and Paul Norris as the artist. His alter ego real name is Arthur Curry, but he's also known by several other names. King Arthur, King of the Seven Seas, Orin, Andy Orosio, Dweller in the Depths, Aquatic Ace, The Marine Marvel, Terra Firma, Rider of the King Tide, AC, if you're a small fellow fan, and Protector of the Deep. Now, his species is he is a human-Atlantean hybrid, depending on what continuity you read. Sometimes he's full Atlantean, sometimes he's full human, sometimes he's both. And his abilities are basically he has superhuman strength, he has durability, he has endurance, he has speed, he has agility, he has reflexes and senses, they're all superhuman. He has telepathic control of all aquatic life. That changes depending on what version you read. He utilizes the trident of Poseidon. He's a master tactician. He's a skilled hand-to-hand combatant and martial artist. He has underwater adaptation. And in some versions, he has hydrokinesis. Mm-hmm. He's usually associated with Queen Mera or Aquawoman, as she is sometimes called. She is his wife. And fun fact, their marriage actually was the first superhero wedding depicted in comics, and we'll chat about that a little bit more in the future. Now, everyone, we are sinking in the depths of Aquaman here. That's why we're a little frazzled. Ashley, did you find the people that requested Aquaman?
I did. So we actually have quite a few requests.
All right.
I'm so glad that we took the time to do that. He was number 332 on our 400 plus list of requests. So thank you for your patience, everyone.
We had to swim pretty deep for that
one.
We
did. All right. Good thing I used to be a competitive swimmer. Shout out to our TAs of this episode, who include Dat Moonman, Chaim Steinberg, and Tobias Steinberg, Jonathan Adkins, Shannon Neff, Dave Rossi, Alexis N. Bowen, Ethan Isaiah Mackey, Andrew Gemirek, I'm so sorry, Isaac Horvat, at @Sir_ShyGuy, Carlos Canans, at @CamSenses, Dustin Carney, Grodd Frankenstein, Vicky Fox Martin, Joshua Van Dan, and Alondris Davis. Thank you so much for requesting Aquaman.
I'm glad we found them then. Thank you so much for looking that up, Ashley.
See, we do get around to them eventually.
Yes, we did. And that was totally my fault when writing this lesson, the notes for this episode. I completely forgot about that.
Well, hey, like the Justice League, we are a team, and we got the job done.
There you go. All right, let's move into the meet cute. Ashley, can you help me out with this intro?
I can. The meet cute is the second part of the podcast where we stole a term from romantic comedy writing. We are professional writers. We are going to tell you where we first met Aquaman and how cute it was.
Ashley, I'm very curious about this. Where did you first meet? Because a lot of your answers are Batman animated series. Aquaman, not in Batman animated series.
True.
Where did you first meet Aquaman?
He is in Justice League, the animated series.
Man, if only we had a Justice League podcast that we could talk about Justice League. Jason and Jeremy John about Justice League. Yeah. Patreon.com/
People should probably request that on the Patreon specifically. Mm-hmm. So do you know those little play school figures and they're like round people? They look like potatoes. They look like eggs, but they're painted to look like there's like a farmer. And,
no, I don't.
Okay. So I hopefully I can find a photo of them. We had some that were Justice League characters when I was growing up.
What?
And we had an Aquaman one. And the Aquaman one, I remember vividly and specifically because underneath our sink, I think like a lot of people, we had like a plastic tub of the toys that we would play with in the bathtub.
Yeah, of course.
The little Aquaman play school man, he had a little hole in the bottom because I think you were supposed to be able to like stick him to play sets. But he lived in that container because he came in the tub with us. So that is like my very first vivid memory of Aquaman.
I'm really excited to see what this toy looks like. I have no idea.
And then shout out to my Uncle Richard, who Jason knows, used to always make the Aquaman talks to fish super friends joke all the time. So like those are my earliest memories of Aquaman. But my first like encounter with Aquaman stories was Justice League, the animated series, which by the way, if people will cast their memories back to our best Aquaman stories episode from a couple years ago, I actually specifically called out a couple of the Arthur two-parters as being some of the best Aquaman stories. So check out that. Check out the Justice League pod. Jason, what is your meet cute for Aquaman?
So Aquaman is one of these characters that I kind of think I always knew who he was. Mm-hmm. I always knew about the orange shirt. I always knew about Serpent Friends, but I really didn't care about Aquaman until he got a harpoon hand. He took off his shirt and he got some long, luscious blonde hair with a big old beard.
Thanks, Peter David.
And he was in, and he was in JLA number one with the Justice League run. This is a very Justice League heavy episode, everybody, by the way. Jason and Jeremy, John about Justice League at patreon.com/John. All right, I promise that won't be the last one. But I love that design. Mm-hmm. It was the first time that because he looked like Conan the Barbarian to me, and I love Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
That's really what made me appeal because orange shirt Aquaman, and I like the orange shirt and the green pants, but like he always looked doofy to me, and I actually kind of like him with a mix of both those costumes. But one of my earliest Aquaman memories is same as Ashley. Hold on.
Action figure spotlight.
An action figure spotlight. So I've mentioned the series on the air several times, but there was a series in the 90s called Total Justice.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought you were going to bring up.
Where they would over, you know, sculpt the characters. They all had grimaces like they were in great strain. And there was a harpoon hand Aquaman in that series. Now, here's where it gets even better. Harpoon hand Aquaman had a variant.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was reading Toy Fair at the time, which is the spinoff of Wizard Magazine, the toy magazine, he has a plate of armor on one of his I think I'm just going to say his right shoulder. I'm not certain whether it's left or his right. In the comics, it's gray. Now, they made the gray Aquaman figure, but they also weirdly made a gold variant.
That's the one that I've seen.
Yes. Ashley, I still have him.
Oh, I know.
And I still have him. In package.
I think I also knew that.
I actually, I don't know if we announced this in the last podcast or not, but we are moving very mm-hmm. soon. And I actually came across him very soon. And I intentionally was like, I am not going to get rid of him because that is the first sort of, it's the first action figure I kept thinking it was going to be worth anything. Now I know it's not worth anything. And it's been damaged and stuff like that. But now I'm like, I'm never going to get rid of that because
it means something
because
to you.
It has a story to me. So if we remember, we will try to take a picture of my in package Total Justice Aquaman harpoon.
But caveat, we are moving. So
yes, so there's a
we'll
chance.
See.
There's a chance it might not happen. So the GHL studio is moving. But that is a big part of Aquaman to me. Harpoon hand and chase variants.
I will co-sign Harpoon hand Aquaman, best Aquaman. Alrighty, so now that we have done that, it is time for the History 101, the main meat of the lesson where Professor Jason is going to break down all the aquatic and subaquatic info that we need for that sweet cocktail party.
Now, Aquaman has, of course, origins in the Golden Age and 1941 and the Silver Age of comics. I'm going to briefly touch on those, but overall, we're going to talk about sort of his main origin that is sort of gelled into the one that they used in the movie and whatnot. Also, Aquaman has been rebooted and killed and brought back to life, I think more so than any other member of the Justice League.
Which is saying something.
Yeah, so there is no way I could talk about everything in Aquaman's history. Atlantis has risen and fallen. Aquaman has gotten on the throne and gotten off the throne. Aquaman has lived and died more.
And taken over different cities that have sunk into the sea.
Yeah, more than any other member of the Justice League. And it is impossible because I would have to explain mm-hmm. every single mm-hmm. one of those. So I'm going to just touch on the ones that I thought were the most important and the ones that I talk about. I also will say that I'm not going to talk a lot about the new 52 Aquaman, which is the one that they talk, the origin that they use in the movies, because I'm like, if you want to know about that one, they literally just copied it into the Aquaman movie with Jason Momoa. And I think that movie's pretty good, so go watch it. All right, so Ashley, real quick, in case anybody doesn't know, can you briefly explain what is the Golden and Silver Age of comic books?
So the Golden Age of comic books begins with Action Comics number one. It is what is considered the beginning of contemporary comic book superhero traditions. Yes, you can make arguments all you want for stuff before that. This is what everybody agrees it is in publishing history. The Silver Age of comics started with the Flash of Two Worlds variant, and it kind of...
Actually, no, it started with the appearance of Barry Allen.
I apologize.
Yep. I think you've made that mix up before, but it's all good.
I don't know why I think it's Flash of Two Worlds.
No, it is a Flash.
Yeah. The first appearance of Barry Allen, and it brought, it introduced the Comics Code Authority, and it kind of made comics a little bit sillier for a while.
Yes. So, initially, when Aquaman first appeared in the Golden Age, he wasn't Atlantean at all.
What?
His father is just a famous undersea explorer, and his father turned to the work of solving the ocean's secrets. And his greatest discovery was that he found an ancient city that he believed was the lost kingdom of Atlantis.
Mm.
Now, Aquaman's father made himself a watertight home somehow in the 30s at the bottom of the ocean.
Magic.
Moved his wife and his boy down there, and they lived under the sea, studying the secrets of this lost city, reading the records.
Under the sea.
And using the devices of the race's marvelous wisdom. So basically, the reason why Golden Age Aquaman was so good underneath the ocean was because his dad was a crazy landlubber and taught him how to live under the ocean. Just basically being like, hold your breath, boy. Yeah, you can survive in the Mariana Trench. Get on over there.
Yeah, really. He was like, if we live under the pressure for so long, it'll be fine.
You're going to develop gills, I know it. Get under there.
Well, also,
eat that kelp, boy.
I mean, historically, I'm assuming they're supposed to be vaguely American. Also, Atlantis is supposed to be vaguely Greek, so.
Yeah. Now, in his first appearance in the comics, Arthur was able to breathe underwater, so apparently it worked out. He could swim at high speeds, apparently worked out.
Uh-huh.
And he could also communicate with marine life, so I guess that worked out as well.
Low-key psychic, very good, very good.
He was actually seen, it's good you brought that up, he's actually seen to directly communicate with aquatic creatures, not telepathically, so he could talk to them. He wasn't telepathy.
And I was wrong.
And he couldn't control them either at this point.
Okay.
Actually, Aquaman, a lot of times during these adventures, he just fought a lot of Nazi U-boats.
A very admirable thing to do with your time, honestly. So, thank you, Arthur.
Yeah, so that's basically Golden Age Aquaman.
Great. And he's blonde because surfer culture.
He's like never been not been blonde.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Silver Age Aquaman.
Okay. I'm now, ready.
Aquaman's adventures were published in Adventure Comics through the 40s and the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Aquaman's ability to talk with fish expanded into full telepathy. Mm-hmm. So he could telepathically communicate with sea creatures from great distances. And also, the Silver Age is where he first developed his weakness. Now, Ashley, do you know what Aquaman's weakness is?
Mara?
All right, boy, I'm raising you into the ocean, and no matter what you do, don't you let them women.
Isn't every straight man's weakness a woman?
Don't you let them women control you.
Now
eat some more kelp.
Kelp is delicious.
It is. Kelp chips are is it kale chips or kelp chips?
Well, seaweed chips.
Seaweed chips.
Are delicious. Is it the fact that he can't breathe well on land because he's used to the water pressure?
You're close.
Okay.
Aquaman... classically.
It's Kane, right? It's Kane. Kane is Spider-Man's clone.
What?
That's a deep cut geek history lesson mistake that Ashley made in the first 100 episodes.
No, classically Aquaman's weakness is that he can only survive away from water for about an hour.
I did not know that. I didn't know that it was an hour. I know he had issues being on land sometimes, depending on the continuity.
It also depends on the continuity and the writer on how long that time on land. Because you think about it, if you're going to Justice League meetings in Happy Harbor on land, an hour is not much time.
No, they do that to Garth as well, Aquaboy, sometimes. So now I know.
So this is where... And they were inspired, DCA comic editors were specifically inspired because this is where the 50s were, where kryptonite came from. Also, Green Lantern's vulnerability to yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So it was about he had to be in contact with water at least once per hour or he would die.
Okay. Yep. Batman's vulnerability to any mention of his parents.
Mm-hmm. Now, prior to this, Golden Age Aquaman could just be in and out of water. It didn't matter.
Yeah, because that makes way more sense in terms of narrative storytelling.
But the cool thing about Aquaman, and we mentioned this briefly, is that in Aquaman 18, in the Silver Age, December 1964, this is where Aquaman married Mara for the very first time. This is the very first superhero wedding depicted in any comic book ever.
Now, I taught the Mara lesson, and I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really cool.
It's really cool. So, Ashley, this is basically all I'm going to talk about Silver Age and Golden Age Aquaman. Because, again, like a lot of the Silver Age adventures, it's just like he fights Ocean Master, he fights Black Manta, they escape, he's on land, he's not on land, he's king, he's not. It's a lot of just repeat, rinse and repeat, if you want to bring a water joke in here. I want to talk about, Ashley, with all the silliness. So, Aquaman first appeared in 1941.
Yep.
He is a very old comic book hero.
Yep.
He's still recognized.
Yeah.
Most of the world knows Aquaman.
I mean, I think my mom knows who Aquaman is.
Well, I was going to say, and we can talk about whether we think it's the silliness and the jokiness. What do you think makes him a character that has staying power? He's been around since 1941.
In terms of the larger pop culture sphere, it's Super Friends.
Ah, fair.
And
Riding the Seahorses.
And it's memes, right? Yeah. Because he's kind of... Him and Robin are sort of the butts of the joke in Super Friends.
Yeah.
Often. And that has turned into, everyone has seen the meme of him riding the two dolphins from Super Friends.
Or the seahorse.
Yeah. The seahorse. Yes.
Yeah. And talking to fish.
Exactly. Like all of that has become memeable culture. So in terms of like contemporary internet culture, it's that. And then it's like
Jason Momoa is going to keep him alive, I think, for the next 40 years.
I agree, but Jason Momoa is the kind of leading man that like women like and straight macho guys like.
Yes. Like Aquaman's dad.
Yeah.
Eat that cowboy.
Is his dad Temuera Morrison?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Aquaman's dad is Boba Fett.
but also, it's great that we actually get to see him do some acting because Temuera Morrison is a wonderful actor with a delightful accent.
He's actually really good in that movie,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he is. I am not as hot on that movie as you are, and he is one of the good parts of that movie,
yes, he is.
In my opinion. Mm-hmm. In terms of comic books, I think Aquaman has staying power because a lot of people who control comic books right now grew up reading Silver Age comics, and Arthur does do some interesting things in the Silver Age. Although, like every DC character, like you say, it's kind of by rote, right? Fight the bad guy, throw the bad guy in jail, kiss your girlfriend, break up with your girlfriend, whatever, whatever. But I also think it's because Aquaman, because people, I think a lot of people would consider Aquaman a second stringer.
I agree.
A B hero.
A B list.
Which means the cool thing about being a B or a C level character is that sometimes you're just left alone by editorial. So your stories can be like really freaking good, like Hook Hand Aquaman, like Death of a Prince, or they can be really bad because you're left alone by editorial.
Can you
so
believe,
that's a long-winded answer.
Can you believe we live in a world where an Aquaman movie has made $1 billion?
Yeah, people like that movie.
It's crazy to me.
We're going to get a second one.
No, yeah. Oh, we're going to get three of them.
Yes, for sure. And he's in the Justice League movie.
All right, now let's get to understanding the modern age of Aquaman or slash Arthur slash Orin. I prefer Orin.
Do you?
I do.
Interesting.
Now, originally, and I'm only going to tell you this because it is a Silver Age thing, but it is going to influence everything that happens.
Yeah.
So in Silver Age continuity, Arthur Curry was the son of a lighthouse keeper named Tom Curry and a woman named Atlanta. Now, Tom Curry lived in the very famous Amnesty Bay, mm-hmm. Maine, which is in Maine, by the way, and he raised the son at the lighthouse. Arthur was able to manifest incredible strength and speed at a young age. Now, here's the thing, and I love this. This is sort of a Peter David retcon of Aquaman's run. It's not the fact that Arthur has super strength or super speed.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
the fact that he has evolved as an Atlantean mm-hmm. to survive the pressures mm-hmm. and the depths of mm-hmm. the ocean. And in fact, Peter David several times in his run has Arthur... When people will call him a metahuman or a superhuman, and he'll be like, I'm just a normal Atlantean, man.
Yeah, it's just by comparison to people who don't live underwater, I am faster, I am stronger, I am a mumbler.
Similar to Mr. Spock as a Vulcan on Star
yes.
Trek, he's stronger than a human because his planet had more gravity.
Yep.
So.
That's like a cool science fiction thing. I love that a lot.
On her deathbed, Atlanta revealed that she was an exiled queen of Atlantis and that he would someday inherit rule of the seven seas. His father gave him an education, taught him how to control his power, and eventually he became the superhero Aquaman. Now, Aquaman's origins were changed significantly with the comic book event Crisis on Infinite Earths.
We know a little bit about that.
Ashley, briefly explain Crisis on Infinite Earths to the listeners.
In 1985, DC said there's too many Earths. So the Anti-Monitor ate them all and pooped out one Earth, and most characters got a hard reboot.
Most characters did, yes. And Aquaman did not get a hard reboot, but he got changes.
He got like a medium reboot, I would say.
He got a soft boot, I think. So he is now called Orin,
mm-hmm.
O-R-I-N.
Mm-hmm.
That is his Atlantean name.
Mm-hmm.
And he is born as the heir to the Atlantean royal family. His mother, Atlanta, had been unable to conceive a child with her husband, King Trevis, but she was impregnated during a dream by the immortal wizard Atlan. Now, mm-hmm. Atlan is a Atlantean character that kind of existed in the Silver Age and was brought to prominence by this
story.
Yeah,
he's like a magic-y guy.
And a lot of this I'm talking about happened in a storyline called the Atlantis Chronicles that mm-hmm. was written by Peter David post-Christ on Infinite Earths. Now, Atlan, this wizard, prophesized that the child, Orin, his future, and said that he would become a great Atlantean and named him after his ancestor, Orin, promising that he would sire another son because two brothers must always be in the struggle for the fate of Atlantis. Travis immediately knew that the child wasn't his because Orin was born with blonde hair, which is uncommon for Atlanteans.
So Travis is like, look, I know a thing or two about genetics.
Yes, exactly.
There's no recessive genes in Atlantis.
And in fact, among Atlantis, there was a long-held superstition slash curse that a blonde-haired child born in Atlantis would carry the curse of Kordax. Now, Kordax is an ancient Atlantean. He basically has blonde hair, green skin, claws, and scales. He looks like half fish, half man.
Mm-hmm.
This is, Kordax was a signal that Atlanteans didn't want to think about, that Atlanteans were evolving into more creature than man.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of funny when you think about it, because most of DC Atlantis' storylines are like, we don't want to be like the surface dwellers.
Yeah, but also we don't want to be like the trench, which is a later invention.
But also we don't want to be like a fish.
Yeah.
So, Atlanna announced the baby as a miscarriage to the public and left the baby to die in Mercy Reef, Maine. This is where the baby, to survive, activated its telepathy for the very first time and used it to communicate with sea life, eventually leading him to be raised by dolphins. His adoptive mother was a dolphin named Porm, and she gave him the name Swimmer, although he eventually left his new dolphin family when a fisherman killed his adopted brother, Drin. Now, his next encounter with humanity was with a lighthouse operator named Tom Curry, who took the boy in as a son and gave him the human name Arthur Curry before his death.
Tom Curry is like the DC Universe version of Tim Curry?
I don't think so, because it would have happened before Tim Curry in the Silver
Age. I just want to imagine that his dad looks like Tim Curry.
So Aquaman has the undersea dad that's, eat cowboy, and then he has the on-sea dad that's like, anticipation.
Yes, yeah. Is like fun and fruity. Yes, absolutely.
How do I see you, a fish boy?
And then every once in a while he'll show...
My faithful Aquaman.
And every once in a while, like, cosplays as Long John Silver, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. He was on Long John Silver.
He was. He's a Muppet man. Also, way to bring back the
secret Easter egg.
Secret Easter egg, yeah.
Okay, so Aquaman, of course, would go on to become a founding member of the Justice League of America, and although their origins have been, you know, changed several times in continuity, the original founding members of the Justice League, of course, included Superman, Batman, The Flash, Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, and Wonder Woman. And they met for the first time during an alien invasion by the Apalexians. This was later changed post-crisis to write Batman and Superman out of the Justice League, and also Wonder Woman was replaced by Black Canary. So, Ashley... he's part of the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fish boy. He's raised by dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
But then he meets old Mara.
Yeah.
Who we had a lesson on back in the day. They get married, of course. And then we meet Garth.
Yeah.
Who's Garth?
Aqualad. Yes. I love Garth. I think he's called Tempest now.
He is called Tempest now. That is actually a change that Peter David wrote into his run.
Yes. And he's much more in modern times. He's much more
magical.
Like Atlan, vaguely a wizard.
Yes. Now, Garth, of course, is Aquaman's mentee. I'm going to give you a little bit of it. He was semi-adopted by Aquaman when he was a teenager. His abilities are he has superhuman strength, he has force blast, he has hydrokinesis, he has hydrothermokinesis, he has telepathy research, he can travel through interdimensions, and he has astral projection, a little bit like Doctor Strange.
Yeah. And kind of like Mara sometimes.
Orin eventually returned to Atlantis to free his people who were under the control of a dictatorship. And due to Orin being an Atlantean hybrid, he was actually much stronger, much faster, and more durable than any Atlantean. He also had an ability that many other Atlanteans did not have, the ability to telepathically talk and, as he would later find out, control marine life. And because of this, he was able to take back most of Atlantis on his own. Now, this leads to Arthur becoming the king of Atlantis for the very first time, something we saw very similar to in the Aquaman movie. But I will let you know that Arthur gets the throne of Atlantis. He gives up the throne of Atlantis as much as we brush our teeth. So I'm not going to talk about all of them because it is impossible to track.
Yes.
When he's the king, when he's not the king. Just, he's the king.
Yes. For all intents and purposes, he's the king.
Whoa, a nice dolphin jump.
Thank you.
Ashley, let me ask you this. Do you like King Aquaman, or do you just like plain Aquaman?
Look.
Should he be the king of Atlantis?
As a Commonwealth citizen, I have no use for monarchies at all.
I agree with that.
In terms of storytelling.
And as an American, I'm gonna second that with this, this very American...
Wow, yeah. I was like, is it going to be the Ricochet?
Oh, of course it is.
In terms of storytelling, If you can be a king, why wouldn't you be a king?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So you prefer King or Aquaman?
I do prefer King Aquaman. Okay. I do. Do you disagree?
I don't know. I've never cared for Atlantis or Poseidonis, as sometimes they'll later name
the capital city.
And they flip-flop on that as well, so that's why I'm not bringing it up at all. But I've never cared about Atlantis, and I kind of think that every Atlantis storyline in Aquaman comics is just not good.
That's interesting, because I will fully admit that Peter David Aquaman is my preferred Aquaman run. And for most of it, he is not King of Atlantis, but it is all driving toward him taking
the throne
again.
He eventually does. Yes.
So he kind of has a King Conan moment there.
Yes. Then we get to the very famous Death of Aqua Baby storyline, which we also mentioned. We also did a storyline called Best Aquaman Stories. Eventually, Aquaman's foe, Black Manta, he kidnaps and murders Orin's son, causing a rift between Orin and his wife, Mara, who is driven insane by the grief and is soon committed to the asylum in Poseidonis, which is basically the capital city.
Yeah, they do Mara real dirty at the end of that story.
And Mara actually would not be seen for quite a while in Aquaman comic books. Mm-hmm. And since we're not going to see her for a while, I want to ask you, they are a under-the-sea crime-fighting couple.
Yeah.
They have very similar powers. Mm-hmm. Do you like Aquaman with Mara, or do you like them apart? What do you think are the strengths and weaknesses of them together and them apart? Because I would say, of the superhero couples, I almost feel that in the DC universe, at least, that you kind of have Lois and Clark, and then it kind of goes right to Aquaman and Mara over, I would say, Barry and Iris, because Iris is not an important part of the Flash's Silver Age storylines, whereas Mara is.
Yes, Mara is Arthur's right hand. I would say, yeah.
She's his Watson, for all sakes, and a lot of stories.
Yes, I would say it's Lois and Clark, it's Arthur and Mara, it's Ollie and Dinah, and then it's probably Bruce and Selina.
And Bruce and Selina is very loose in that designation, of course.
Yes, and that's a much more contemporary construct.
I could fill a whole podcast.
Yes, it could, about whether or not Jason and Ashley agree on whether they're a good couple.
We don't.
I really like Arthur and Mara as a couple, and it wasn't a pairing that I really understood until I started reading a lot more Aquaman, and then I read a lot of Mara, obviously, in prep for the lesson.
Uh-huh.
I think Mara is a very cool character who DC consistently does really dirty by.
I agree.
And unfortunately, she is a casualty of, is Arthur the king? Do we want Arthur to be happy or not? But I think Aquaman is best, and I think Aquaman stories are coolest when they are together, because even more than Lois and Clark, they are an equal partnership longer before any other character in the DC universe, which is what I think makes the death of a prince such a compelling and tragic story.
For me, they're very much like a Han Solo and Leia.
Yeah, except he gets her explicit consent before he kisses her most of the time.
Well, yes, but I meant that like, especially like what they do in the later Disney movies, that they're equal power. There are several storylines where Mara is actually the queen of Atlantis.
Yes, and Mara is more powerful than Arthur, because Mara has that aquakinesis, water bending, consistently.
I know they won't call the movie this, but if I had my druthers, I would call Aquaman 2 Aquaman and Mara.
So would I, but they won't.
They
because
won't. It'll be colon the scepter of Neptune or something like that. Now, Arthur knew he had to remain in Atlantis since Mara was going to the insane asylum, and thus he resigned from the Justice League. And for a time, he served as Atlantis' representative to the United Nations. But he kind of always found himself thrust back into the superhero role, because we got a comic book to put out, Aquaman.
Absolutely, you got to punch someone.
But he became more and more a workaholic. And for the first time in his life, he kind of spent more time in the ocean than he did on the surface and with the Justice League. Eventually, Aquaman received the book The Atlantis Chronicles, as I mentioned before, basically detailing the entire history of Atlantis from Volko, who is sort of his Obi-Wan Kenobi figure.
Yep.
Because Volko found them in the wreckage of Poseidonis. Deciding to take up his mother's legacy as the chronicler of Atlantis, Aquaman begins recording his own adventures. He discovers, through these chronicles, that his greatest nemesis, Ocean Master, is really his half-brother, and because of this, Aquaman starts spiraling into depression. Aqualad pulls him out of this to investigate an undersea radiation leak that eventually turns out to be a trap, and they are kidnapped alongside another undersea lady named dolphin.
Boo.
By a figure that has an undersea name that I'm going to point to Ashley right now. I don't know how to say that word, Ashley. I've never heard that word said out loud.
I don't think I have either, but I'll make a go at it.
I'm going to say Charybdis.
Or Charybdis. It looks Greek to me, or Greek in origin.
Yes, I've never said that out loud, but that he's an Aquaman villain.
If you know how to pronounce it, very kindly, let us know.
Look, we've talked earlier on some X-Men podcasts that for years and years and years, how do you say the X-Men villain?
Phalanx.
I, for years, thought it was Phalanx, and that's it. And it's hard for me to get out of that now. So I'm just going to say Charybdis. I've never heard it said out loud.
Yeah.
So if you don't know who Dolphin is, she's a white-haired Atlantean who is also an alien experiment who sometimes dates Aquaman in between the marriages of Mera.
Whose pants are dangerously low throughout.
Very much so. They're like the dungarees of, or the Daisy Dukes.
They're just not buttoned, which, considering how much drag there is underwater, bad move, Dolphin.
I don't know why you would wear blue jean shorts if you're a swimmer.
Because misogyny. Yes. Because of the male gaze.
So the three of them, Aqualad, Dolphin, and Aquaman, they escape from Charybdis, and it leads to a big old fight, and Charybdis holds down Aquaman's hand into a pool of piranha, and the piranha eat off Aquaman's hand. Now, they progressively nurse Aquaman back to health back at the Aqua Cave. Yes, they had an Aqua Cave at this time. And Orin eventually emerges with a harpoon hand into the stump of his left hand so that he can rejoin the fight. And this led to an entirely new look for Aquaman for the very first time. He discarded his classic orange shirt for a more gladiatorial look with a silver piece of armor that only covered his upper right chest, or gold if you are chasing Total Justice action figures. And he grew long blonde hair. He had a scraggly beard. And his original harpoon was just a normal fish harpoon. It was destroyed in battle. And Orin had it replaced with a cybernetic replacement golden arrow, harpoon that he could launch out of his hand, and he could pull people, he could do all those things, and this was given to him by Star Labs, and it was completely retractable. Now, I know you're probably like, how did the rope exist inside his stump? Comic book, just go with it.
Would you like the internet to tell you how to pronounce Charybdis?
Sure. Charybdis?
That's the Greek pronunciation. Here's the Anglo pronunciation.
Charybdis.
Charybdis.
That, you know what?
It is Greek. It's from a Greek myth.
Charybdis. I'm sorry, everybody listening. I apologize.
That's fine. We do our best with the information we have. Now we have more information. No. We stand growth and development. Now we've grown.
How do you say it again?
Charybdis.
I'll probably never say it again.
Like, like Karen, right? It's spelled with the C-H, that Greek C-H that always gets us.
Now, Ashley, I have made no secrets that the Peter David Aquaman, the harpoon hand Aquaman, is my favorite Aquaman of the 90s. And now I know it is extreme to some people, but this is the Aquaman like your first Doctor Who. This is my first Aquaman. And I think you can totally see that this harpoon hand Aquaman is 100% responsible for Jason Momoa Aquaman, because we've talked about this several times, that when Jason Momoa was cast in Batman v Superman, they did not announce his part, and everybody thought he was going to be Doomsday or something like that. And I said, if they want people to take Aquaman seriously, Jason Momoa is Aquaman.
You said that like a year before they announced that he was Aquaman. I remember, because we were walking around a park. I remember that conversation vividly.
What do you like about Harpoon Hand Aquaman? Why is he your preferred? I know he's your preferred Aquaman. Mm-hmm. And what would you say? Because I know we are getting so many people where they're like, are you crazy? You're both crazy. You're crazy.
Well,
you're not crazy. You're mad.
You're wild.
You're wild. We should not say crazy anymore.
Yeah, we're trying to be less ableist in our language. So the thing about the ocean to me is the ocean is really scary.
Yeah.
Scientifically, we understand more about the surface of Mars than the depths of our own ocean. And as land-dwelling mammals, Kevin Smith actually says this, when you go back into the ocean, you're no longer at the top of the food chain. And that is something that I think about a lot. And I'm a proficient swimmer. I worked as a lifeguard, and I think the ocean is very scary. And what I find compelling about Hook Hand Aquaman, Peter David Aquaman, is it fully embraces that. And it embraces the idea that the Atlanteans in a lot of ways are like Klingons. They're very warlike. They're very honor-bound.
Trial by combat.
They pull a lot of things that feel traditional to First Nations cultures and to African cultures and to Japanese cultures. And it's very strict and it's very tough. And I think the Peter David Aquaman really embraces that. And that's what I like about it. I'm not saying it's perfect. I mean, I was just digging on Dolphin, and like, she is a big part of that universe and this time, and she was created during this time. It's not infallible, but I think it's a much more interesting look at Atlantis and at Aquaman than what we had been presented with. And that's just to my taste, but I like the extreme nature of it because I think the ocean is scary.
I agree. And it's chaotic and adventurous and mean, like a Conan the Barbarian story. Mm-hmm. It makes it seem like a frontier.
And it makes him seem a less like a side character from The Little Mermaid.
Instead of like, oh, it's goofy fish.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fish are serious business.
So Aquaman was called by Deep Blue and the Sea Devils to investigate a seemingly bottomless trench. Now, this is not the trench you're thinking about. Aquaman encounters Black Manta, mm-hmm. who at this time had been turned into a horrible manta-like monster thanks to a deal with Neron, who is the DC Comics devil. Now, these two archenemies just pummeled each other at the bottom of this trench. Aquaman beated him eventually. And then when he comes out of this very deep trench, it's deeper than the Marianas Trench.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur notices that because he was so far away from sunlight, that his flesh is covered with scales,
mm-hmm.
green scales.
Mm.
And over the next couple of days, his eyes change and his skin changes and he gets a webbed hand and he begins to look just like Kordax. Remember the original Atlantean, the curse?
I do.
And he finds that the Atlanteans and other sea creatures begin to fear him because they're like, what the hell are you?
Mm-hmm.
So this leads Aquaman to go on a quest of soul searching, you know, a nice little swim, which he does a lot. And he reflects on the fact that his inner fear is that he is a failure as a king and he's a failure as a man. And he sort of has a minor journey through time thanks to Atlan, his sort of spiritual wizard father,
mm-hmm.
And sort of helps him put things in perspective. And when he returns to the present, Atlan restores Aquaman's appearance back to his classic appearance of mm-hmm. white skin. Although, from going forward, Aquaman now has webbed hands.
Yeah, which, I mean,
makes
sure.
sense. Makes sense.
It does make sense, actually.
Then our world of war happened. Now, this is a really cool, I like this storyline, 2000s mid-Superman storyline that they made a crossover event across the DC universe. Basically, Imperix, who is DC's Galactus, attacks the Earth.
You're not wrong.
And a bunch of worlds go at war to fight him. When Imperix attacks the Earth, an explosion happens and right over Poseidonis.
Uh-huh. The capital
Atlantis.
City of Atlantis.
And when the water is cleared, Atlantis is gone and there is a giant rift in the ocean. Aquaman was in Atlantis when this happened. Everybody considered him to be dead.
Yeah, he's dead for a minute.
Yes. And that leads to a very cool storyline called JLA, the Obsidian Age, where the JLA have to travel back in time to rescue Aquaman because they find clues that, wait, mm-hmm. Aquaman and Atlantis is not dead. They're actually hundreds of thousands of years in the past. And when they go back in time, Batman activates a really cool Justice League that's led by Nightwing.
Yeah, and then this same thing happens when Bruce Wayne gets it back in
yes.
time.
So they go back to the past, the Justice League, and they bring Atlantis back to the future. And they're like, yay, Arthur's back. He's not dead.
Woo!
And then Infinite Crisis happens. Ashley, what's Infinite Crisis?
Infinite Crisis is the one where Superboy Prime gets really mad and he punches a hole in the universe.
That's correct. And the multiverse comes back.
Yeah.
Yes.
We undo some parts of yep. Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Now, during this storyline, Aquaman seemingly dies again.
Yeah.
And he disappears, as is told in the follow-up storyline 1 year later. As told in the DC Comics storyline 52. Now, this is where all the DC Comics storylines jumped ahead 1 year. Now, after the 1 year later, we meet a new Arthur Curry. But this
what?
Arthur Curry is not our Aquaman.
What?
This happened in Aquaman Sword of Atlantis number 40. It is revealed later that the creature who hangs around with this new Arthur Curry, known as the Dweller in the Depths, he actually is kind of a Davy Jones-looking guy. He is Orin. He is our Aquaman, and some way over the year, he is transformed into this weird squid creature.
Sure.
But eventually, comes to find out that the Dweller of the Depths, Orin, is also killed.
What?
And the Justice League wonders if his magical nature would allow him to resurrect himself, or is he truly dead this time?
Well, it's comics, so I'm going to bet not dead.
So I just want to point out, in the span of less than 2 years, Aquaman has, or 10 years, Aquaman has been killed twice.
Yeah.
And brought back to life. So, you know, that's the end of the lesson.
Okay, great. Yeah. You think you did a really good job.
Then Blackest Night happened.
Oh, yeah.
What's Blackest Night, Ashley?
Blackest Night is a 2010 DC Comics event that Spike TV in 2010 called it their best comic series of the year. Basically, what if Green Lantern, but zombies, though?
Yes. So, Orin was revived as one of the Black Lanterns because the Black Lanterns were resurrecting dead people.
Yes.
And he had his hand restored.
And there is a Red Lantern.
And then when 12 people mysteriously were revived by the White Lantern Central Power Battery, Aquaman, Orin, was one of those people. And now he's brought back to life.
Yeah, DC basically was like, who do we want to come back? Not Ted Kord.
Yes. So now Aquaman's history was, you know, back to kind of what it was. He kind of like swam around the ocean a little bit. He kind of
didn't have a cool harpoon hand anymore.
He didn't have a cool harpoon. He didn't even have a cool water hand,
Mara
which he had
was
for a while.
Mad for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The water hand was a neat alternate, I thought.
And then we're going to move into the new 52. What is that?
Barry Allen missed his mommy, so he ran back in time. Everyone except Batman and Hal Jordan had only been a superhero for like 5 years, and everybody got more lines on their costumes. And Geoff Johns was on Aquaman writing duty at the time, I believe. And I will say, the Aquaman story from, or the Aquaman covers from this story were very, very cool. And this was the first time in my comics buying history that Aquaman was really cool again. People really were hot on this Aquaman book. And that's just because I wasn't actively buying when the Peter David run was around. But I really remember when the New 52 started, everyone was like, wow, are you reading Aquaman? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, I'm not reading Aquaman. I'm only reading Batman stuff because I'm a child.
Yes. Now, Aquaman's history was slightly retconned again, especially his origin. Again, I'm not going to really go that much into it. It's very similar to the Lighthouse Keeper, except they kind of retcon out all the Atlantean wizard stuff and the Orin stuff, which I think is the cool stuff.
It's messy.
It is
like really messy.
It is messy, but I think it's more interesting. But I understand you want to streamline it because they know an Aquaman movie's a coming. So if you want to know what the changes are, just go watch the movie. So here's some small changes here in this new 52 retcon.
Okay.
Aquaman is a founding member of the Justice League again, and together they face an invasion from Darkseid, the ruler of the planet Apocalypse. Aquaman begins protecting Boston with Mara, and they decide to live on land and not live in Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
During this time, they face the creatures of the Trench. They're evil fish creatures that you've seen in the movie as well. And, Aquaman manages to destroy the Trench. And then we get to learn the origin, because this is where Aquaman starts carrying around a trident.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not really a trident. And he learned that it is actually the trident of Neptune. It was the trident that was actually used by Atlan, the deceased first king of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ashley, I'm going to ask you,
yeah,
do you like Aquaman with a trident?
I do, actually.
Okay.
I do. I think his is technically a quindrant or a quadrant, because it's either four.
It has five.
Five,
it has five,
so
I believe.
Quindrant. There's probably a different name for
it,
but it's not. Trident implies three. I do.
Well, in the comics it's three, but in the movie it's five.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I think a trident is a cool, underappreciated weapon.
How do you swim with a trident?
You hold it in your hand like a spear. It is fairly aquadynamic.
I don't know. I think a trident's weird.
It's way more efficient than a firearm or a sword.
Not as efficient as a harpoon hand.
But
just saying.
That's true. Look, I am pro harpoon hand, okay? I am on your side. But
I hope we see that in the movie. I'm just saying.
But a trident, if you throw all your mind all the way back to the gladiators, a trident, the Myrmidons, the trident and net wielders, very, very efficient because it is a ranged weapon. I think it looks cool.
Sure.
So that's why I don't have any issues with Aquaman using it. And I like the comparison to gods, obviously, Poseidon.
To Neptune. I will say this. I don't think it's a bad update.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Anyways, so following the company-wide soft rebranding as DC Rebirth.
Oh, no, they're called Myrmillions, not Myrmidons. Myrmidons are Iliad. Sorry.
Sure. Arthur finally proposes to Mara in this new continuity. He has a bunch of other adventures. He gets the throne. He loses the throne. He gets the throne. He loses the throne. Mara's the queen. Mara's not the queen. And
they made a movie out of it.
Arthur is thought dead one more time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got to have four times that we think Aquaman is dead in 20 years. And him and Mara get married. And that's where we're going to leave it. Now, I know there's some more recent stuff about him getting lost on an island and finding that he's more connected to gods and stuff like that. But
yeah, basically copying what they did with Wonder Woman 5 years earlier.
Well, I will say this. Doing this research for Aquaman, it really seems like a new writer comes on the book, has some great ideas mm-hmm. to expand the mythology, and then the very next writer, there's two types of Aquaman writers. Mm-hmm. There's one that expands the mythology in interesting and different mm-hmm. ways, and then the very next writer is like, no, orange shirt, green pants.
I agree. So you're either trying to do different things, and we get something like the Sub Diego storyline, yep. which we talked about a lot in our Best Aquaman series.
Which is really good, and I didn't mention that, but I'm sorry.
That's okay. We talked about it extensively on a previous episode. It's totally fine. But like, that's a really interesting sort of different thing, right? Or you only want him to be Super Friends style Aquaman, both of which are valid ways to tell stories. But in terms of structuring a podcast, it makes it a little repetitive sometimes, unfortunately. It's kind of like, oh, is he a warrior or is he a wizard? You know, is he a superhero or is he a king? And those things sometimes have a hard time coexisting in a full storyline. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's it. So let's go to recommended reading.
Where, if you enjoyed this lesson and you want more to read on Aquaman, you head on over to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. We have great little widgets. You click on them, you buy them, you steal money out of Jeff Bezos's pockets, and you put it back in ours so we can continue construction on our underwater kingdom.
The first one I'm going to recommend, although I will say we did do a Best Aquaman Storylines yep. episode, so mm-hmm. there's some good recommendations there. The very first one, of course, is Aquaman by Peter David, Book 1. It is on Amazon.
Yeah.
It is how he gets the harpoon hand. It is how he does all the things. It is highly recommended. It is the run that really got me into Aquaman. There's also Aquaman Volume 1, The Trench. This is where it introduces mm-hmm. The Trench. This is Geoff Johns storyline. If you read it, you're going to see a lot of similarities to the movie. And then last off, I think there's a really good hardcover called Aquaman, A Celebration of 75 Years.
Those are great volumes. We recommend them often.
And it has like... it has Aquaman stories from literally every era.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to recommend to you.
I think those are great. I'll probably put the movie on there as well.
Why not?
Because why not?
Why not? Let's go into the teaching tweet.
Alrighty, we're in 140 or 240. We don't know what Twitter does anymore. Characters or less, Professor Jason is going to sub up everything he just taught you about Aquaman.
The only boy in the ocean that ate enough kelp to become Aquaman. Hashtag harpoon hand rocks.
Oh, well, that's funny. made it. He deserves it.
That's right. All right. So now we're going into the honor roll.
Yes.
Where if you go over to Apple Podcasts and you leave us a 5-star review, we're going to read whatever the heck you write on the air. So, Ashley, do we have somebody this week that is going to be joining the honor roll?
Of course we do. We are going to be joined this week by GranadXXS. Just put your names. Who says amazing? 5 stars. Found this podcast by accident in March of 2020 because, you know, global pandemic. And then that little like smiling, sweating emoji.
Okay.
But it has become one of my absolute favorites.
Oh,
I started with the episode of my favorite character, Nightwing. That's an OG episode.
Yeah.
And I've almost finished every episode. Bless you.
Wow. Good
Keep
for you.
Keep up the great work, you guys. I do want to say in the reviews, a lot of people have shared some really beautiful personal things about how we have helped them through various times in their lives. And one of the best things about doing the podcast through the pandemic is that we get to be people's friends during this time. So
I will say doing the podcast through the pandemic has definitely helped my pandemic.
Absolutely. So GranadXSSS, thank you for your review. Thank you for being a new-ish listener, and I'm really glad that we could be your pandemic friend, too.
Yeah.
That means a lot.
Yeah.
Jason, what's going on in the teacher's lounge?
Well, over in the corner, we have a guest professor.
Yeah?
Peter David is here.
Holy shit. He is jolly, in. I will not swear.
I convinced him to come in, and he brought some Star Trek novels, because he writes a lot of Star Trek novels,
prolific
too.
Prolific Star Trek
writer,
yes.
Yeah. Also, you may not know this as well, everybody. He also wrote Spider-Man 2099. So he has a Miguel O'Hara episodes over there.
I hope he's got one of them slabbed, because that movie's a-coming.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I have a Spidey 29. So, you gotta be quiet. He's
sensitive writer.
He's
type.
Very particular. So, but you can come in and say hi to him.
Wow.
And he did bring his harpoon. So be careful.
Stand well back.
Yes. Yeah. You stay out of his arm reach with the harpoon. It will be dangerous. And we say this in a jest, Mr. Peter David, please come on the podcast if you want to.
Truly, nothing but love and respect.
Nothing but respect for you,
for
sir.
My Aquaman author.
So anyways, yeah, thank you so much for that excellent review. Thank you so much for coming into the Mind University Teacher's Lounge. If you want to be like them, go over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. Also, don't forget to subscribe to us over there on Apple and Spotify and Stitcher and all the places that you listen. They all have reviews. Go listen to them. If you have a friend out there that's a big Just League fan or a big Aquaman fan, tell them about this episode. Share this podcast with them. Word of mouth is one of the greatest ways. When a friend recommends a podcast to me or texts me a podcast, I always listen to it. Talking to you, Mr. Adam Drosen.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't know if he listens or not, but I'm going to shout him out. I love all of his recommendations. So, you know, if you got a big Aqua baby out there, fan of Aquaman, then tell them about this podcast.
Be the Adam Drosen in their life.
That's a high compliment.
It is. It's a huge compliment.
Ashley, where can they follow us on social media and if they want to suggest future lessons?
So the best place that you can follow us is all of these places. In fact, geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at @GHLpodcast. You can contact us in all of those places, and those are the best ways to be included in our TA list on future episodes.
Don't forget to follow myself on Twitter and Instagram at Jawin. That's JAWIIN. Follow Ashley on Twitter and Instagram at Ashley V. Robinson. And come on over to the Patreon. Support Geek History Lesson at patreon.com/Jawin. That's JAWIIN. Not only could you get the Jason and Jeremy Jawin about Justice League 2 to 3 episodes a month talking about Justice League, and we got a special offer going on there. You can also listen to Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures, which is a personal where Ashley and I talk about our personal lives. And at the $5 tier is Geek History Lesson Extra, the companion podcast. This podcast happens every week. If there's a Geek History Lesson episode, there's a GHL Extra. This week, we're going to talk about Aquaman's most dangerous villains, and we're going to rank them.
Dun, 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 dun.
So if you want to hear that episode, come on over to patreon.com/Jawin. And now, we're going to talk about #StickAround, the section where we make sure you stuck through the plugs, which, Ashley, I did not write down. So we're going to do it off the, top of our heads, Ashley. Yeah. And I'm going to ask you.
Yeah.
Do you think, we talked about this, let's be in all honesty here.
Okay.
We're hashtag harpoon hand rocks.
Absolutely, yes.
Do you think there's any chance they do it in a movie? Will they give Jason Momoa a harpoon hand?
I cannot believe they didn't do it in the first movie, particularly with Jason Momoa.
It's one of Aquaman's most famous storylines.
Well, and Mr. Momoa is also famous for playing characters who are kind of hard asses. I don't know his character's name from Stargate, but I know he was in Stargate.
Ronan Dex.
Thank you. Khal Drogo is the much more obvious comparison.
I can't believe you pulled out Atlantis. Well done.
It was the only thing I knew him for until Game of Thrones. Sure. He had dreadlocks in that.
Yes, he did.
Which I'm pretty sure was a wig.
I don't know.
Someone can confirm or deny it. I don't know. If you know Jason Momoa, ask him for us.
Yeah. Hey, Jason.
What's up?
How's it going?
Name twins. I think to have Jason Momoa as Aquaman and to not do it for a movie or for at least the final act, the final big superhero fight, it would be a mistake.
I know Cyborg and Justice League are going to fix it because it's the same reason like Walking Dead. It's a very famous in the Walking Dead comic books that Rick Grimes loses his hand and doesn't have a hand for the rest of the series. They never did that in the television show. They made you think they were going to do it a couple of times and then they tricked you. I would say that you could do it. Maybe that could be his all is lost moment, if you know
writing
terms.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact they would never make it last more than a movie. But
no,
I think,
and just have magic fix it. Yeah. Who cares? Do some waterbender healing like Katara does. Whatever.
He knows Cyborg. Have Star Labs just build him a new hand.
Yeah.
It's fine. Or this would be the perfect way to give him the water hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
Which is also a cool Aquaman thing that I would love to see in a movie.
I think we'll only see it for the length of a movie tops.
An act.
More realistically, the final fight. Yeah, the final act.
You'll see it for an act, and he'll use it to win or something.
Yeah,
like
I would love, I think it would be great.
I think it would be a really cool moment.
And I think
they've
got a really great casting choice to pull something like that off and make it seem legit and serious.
Yeah, make it seem hardcore.
Yeah.
As Jason Momoa is.
Edgy.
Yeah, so there you go.
There you go.
Well, that worked out.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Geek History Lesson, everybody. If you're one of our Under the Sea listeners, then I have only blah, 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 that to say to you. You know, only the Under Sea Water people are going to get that. So,
if you have a review from Atlantis, please, you're on international iTunes, take a screenshot and send it to us at geekhistorylesson@gmail.com.
Yes, please. thank you so much for listening. I had fun with this episode and, you know, rush out in a harpoon buy-in frenzy. Don't go for the tridents, go for the harpoons. I have been Jason, still an Aqua Boy Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson, and Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
Have your kelp and classes dismissed.